Right. Actually, maybe let me ask a question. So I kind of assume that all of you took or learned quantum mechanics at some point, right? Like who, maybe just by showing over your hands, like who hasn't taken the course like about quantum mechanics? Okay, great. So everyone knows about quantum mechanics. So, and who actually wants to try like maybe just like a one sentence summarization, like say, what do you think that the these typical quantum mechanics courses that's trying to teach you? Like anyone? I don't know. Just maybe like one sentence, like what do you think that the lecturer in the quantum mechanics class that's trying to teach you? You wanna try, Manuel?
Outcomes of any outcome is always probabilistic and not deterministic. Like
okay. Right, any outcome is probabilistic, not deterministic. But the problem.
Oh, sorry, maybe I said it wrong. It is still governed by Schrodinger equation, but
right.
It's probably.
Uh-huh. But yeah, that's a good point. So you do have to solve for the probability distribution, right? But where does the probability distribution coming from? Like, what's the ultimate description for that probability distribution? Anyone?
Integral.
Right?
You know, like, think like class integral.
Path integral.
By a classical weight.
Right. So that's like indeed that's like one way of viewing this probability in a classical picture. But in the end, like I would say what you're actually trying to learn in these quantum mechanical classes is actually trying to solve for the wave function, right? So I think maybe a lot of maybe different places that they probably teach the quantum mechanics in a different way, but maybe you probably spent a lot of time trying to learn, okay, how to solve the Schrödinger equation, right? And actually, that's also really important that you, once you, like, most of the time that in that, those classes that like give you a Hamiltonian, you're trying to solve for the eigen energy and the eigen function, right? And then, of course, like say the hydrogen atom model, you solve for all those spectrums, and then that actually does matches with the observation from the experiments that I would say almost perfectly. And of course that those are like some very special models that you can solve things exactly. And of course that there's more and more stuff that you cannot really solve things exactly. So you have to develop some say perturbation theory and then, or maybe say the variational method, say maybe even for say the hydrogen molecules that there's actually no exact solution. You have to do things this exactly. So things becomes more and more complicated and difficult. Like even it's so difficult to solve for the spectrum in any kind of molecular system, but things get even worse like when you're trying to understand the spectrum from your like say nuclear nucleus, right? So that was like a problem. I actually don't know how long ago. I don't know, maybe 50 years ago or so. So one thing that's, I would say, kind of revolutionary or kind of, it's like a very important paradigm shift was actually due to Wigner. I think it's Wigner and then some following work that's done by Dyson. So what Wigner proposed is that, okay, so when you're trying to look at the nuclear spectrum, because this this system is just so complicated that there's almost no hope that we can just write down the Hamiltonian and then trying to solve for all the nuclear spectrum and then trying to match all the spectrum. So instead, that what he proposes that instead of understanding the spectrum exactly, let's maybe describe the statistical properties of the spectrum. So that's actually the first insight, and I would say it's a very at that time, it's pretty revolutionary thought in terms of quantum mechanics. And the second insight is that, okay, if we want to understand the statistical property of the nuclear spectrum, then what kind of stuff that we need to use to describe that? So the second insight that he had was that if you look at the energy spectrum of your nucleus, and then if you zoom in into narrow enough of the energy window, then his intuition is that you can basically understand the statistical property of these spectrons using random matrix. So as if that these spectrons are generated from some random Hermitian, I mean random Hamiltonian. So So it kind of, I would say that his insight of trying to understand the statistical probability of the nucleus that makes physics is starting to look at the quantum mechanics in a different way. So I guess that's probably like one of the start of the random matrix theory due to Wigner. And then there's a lot of work that down followed by Dyson. Freeman Dyson. Yeah. And then okay. So that was actually something that to understand the nucleus spectrum, right? So what does it have to do with quantum chaos? And it turns out that after some work that there's actually three people that they had a conjecture. I can't remember the name, so I have to take a look of my cheat note. These three guys. Yes. No. Schmidt. They had the conjecture. So what they did is that they studied the problem of this so-called the Zeeland billiard. So if you think about this problem as a classical mechanics, then say you just shoot your particle in this region, and then outside of this region is just impenetrable walls. Then actually you would actually expect that the this classical problem actually shows chaos. But what they solve is that now if you solve the quantum mechanical single particle problem instead, which means that if you try to solve this problem, the eigenvalue problem, and the V is infinite when in V is infinite at this shaded region, then what they discover is that at high enough energy, or like almost in the semi-classical limit, the spectrum that they got, if you look at the level spacing statistics of these spectrums, then they seem to be given by some, or the statistical property of that seems to be described by some random matrix theory, which we will talk in more detail. And then which seems to be described by that. So they actually had a conjecture that if you have a quantum mechanical system, and then which has a say semi-classical or classical counterpart, and then that classical counterpart is chaotic, then they have a conjecture that the energy level spacing statistics will be described by some random matrix theory. So that's why this is just a conjecture, and I should say that they are indeed systems that violate this conjecture, but actually a lot of the systems that people has been checking about this criteria, say you just take a single particle system and then trying to solve for the spectrum and then see if that actually the statistical property of that is described by some random matrix theory. And then they seem to be satisfying this conjecture pretty well. So that's why there's a huge part of the quantum chaos study that's actually related to the random matrix theory. And I would say that these things getting like this is actually somewhat useful that if you are actually if you are thinking about a system that doesn't have a simple semi-classical correspondence, for example, that if you're thinking about a many body system, say if I have like n qubit chain, and then there's actually no easier way to think about like a semi-classical picture of that, then a lot of people still use this conjecture. And so in a sense, like a lot of people even take this conjecture as the definition of quantum chaos, meaning that one possible definition of the quantum chaos is that if your energy level spectrum can be described by some random matrix theory, I mean the statistical property of that. Yeah. So actually, that's why we want to know a little more about random metric theory and then use this as a tool to maybe characterize or understand quantum chaos. Any question so far? And by the way, just feel free to ask questions. Again, like there's not that many students here, so you shouldn't be, you shouldn't feel awkward to ask any question. Yeah. Oh.
Can you give a bit details about random metric theory?
Yes, that's how what I will do in the rest of the lecture. Yeah, this is just some introduction, give you some reason why do we care, like in the context of quantum chaos. Okay, so so now we know why and why study random metric theory and then quantum what's the relation to quantum chaos? Then let's say what is a random metric theory? Or what is a random metric theory? So really it's just that if I have a matrix, n by n matrix, then you just imagine that all the coefficients are drawing from some probability distribution. But what in particular, what we are interested in is the special kind of matrix, which is Hamiltonian. So the special property of the Hamiltonian is that we want a Hermitian matrices. Right? So let's maybe focusing on two types of the Hamiltonian. First, hope this is good enough. Right. Yeah. So the first case is just that if the Hamiltonian, the coefficients of the Hamiltonian are just all real value, then this is just the Hamiltonian will has to be just a real symmetric Hamiltonian matrix, right? Matrix. So if I have an n by n matrix, then let's count how many free degrees of freedom that we have. Say from H11 to H1n. But once you know the values of at the upper triangle part, then all these values will just be fixed, right? So the probability, so the random matrix for a real symmetric Hamiltonian can be described by this type of the probability distribution, say when k is less than j. Right? And then there's like how many of them? 1 plus 2, which is this many degrees of freedom. Okay. And I haven't specified what kind of probability distribution we are using yet, but it is just some probability distribution for all the free degrees of freedom in the matrix. Yeah.
Should be n plus less.
Right, sorry. Yeah. Okay. This is just a side note. So this is the real case, and then that is one special case of the type of the Hamiltonian that we encounter a lot. But actually, the most generic one is that the coefficient can just be just some complex number, right? But the diagonal has to be real because you have to satisfy the Hermitian condition. So the general situation is that you can have a complex coefficient, then again in this case that you have to specify how many probability distribution we can, let's count again. So for all the off diagonal terms that you have the real number and the complex number that you have to determine, so that's 2, but how many off diagonal terms that we have? I think that's probably this number. Right? Not sure. Oh, yeah. And then for the diagonal terms, that they are n of them, but we only have to determine real number. So they are this many degrees of freedom or probability distributions that we have to satisfy. So what is this? So this is just n squared, right? Okay, so let me just schematically write it as this. So when k is less than j, we have to specify the real part and the imaginary part. Imaginary part and the real part. But then for the diagonal part, we only need to specify the real part. Okay. So,
what is the meaning of pH?
So this is the probability distribution of a Hamiltonian. So this H means, this H just means that it's the collection of all those three parameters. Okay, so this is the probability density distribution of this matrix. Okay, any questions so far? Yeah.
Do people ever consider random matrix theory of open quantum systems?
So here that
kind of relax the Hermitian condition a little.
I think some people are thinking about that, but for now that's just focusing on the closed quantum system that we're just describing. In the sense like I just give you the Hamiltonian and then you're trying to solve for the eigenenergy.
Yeah.
Okay, so these are the fairly general description, and the famous one that initially Wigner and later on Dyson was thinking about is this so-called Gaussian orthogonal ensemble. So the probability distribution is specified as when at the diagonal part, this is just a normal distribution with mean 0 and variance 1. For the off-diagonal part, this is given by a normal distribution with mean 0, variance 1/2. And then just to remind you what is the normal distribution, this is, I hope that I remember this correctly, about the normalization coefficient. I think this is the case. Please correct me if I'm wrong, like I guess. So this, and again, like probably you can try to just scale all these variants, but the important thing is that the off-diagonal part and the diagonal part that they have to have this ratio. And why is this like special thing? So I would say maybe as an exercise that if you specify this in this form, then, can you see the bottom line here? Okay, then you can actually show that this has like a relatively simple form that it looks like this 1/2 trace h squared. I'll leave this as an exercise for you. Yeah, it's actually fairly simple that what you really need to care about is actually the par in the exponent, and then you're just plugging everything here and then manipulate the coefficient, then you'll find out that they actually agree. So what's good about, why do we want a form like this? One benefit is that then you can see that this ensemble is invariant under any orthogonal transformation. Okay, so if you have any orthogonal transformation, then this is invariant. Okay. So that's for the first case. And then there's also a Gaussian version of the most general complex matrix. That's the so-called Gaussian unitary ensemble, usually named as GUE. And again, that is specified by the diagonal part has to be this probability distribution, and all the real and imaginary part of the off-diagonal matrix element are drawn from this Gaussian distribution. And again, one can actually still show that if I choose the probability distribution like this, then it has a very nice form. I think it's like this. So which means that you have an ensemble which is invariant under any unitary transformation. Just look at my cheat sheet, make sure that this is right. Maybe I'm missing a 1/2. No, that's right. Yeah, okay. Any questions so far?
How hard is it to pick ensembles that are invariant under unitary transformations?
That's a great question. So it turns out that there's a theorem, I forgot what was the name, that actually shows that if you require the ensemble to be invariant under say either orthogonal or unitary transformation, then your P of H has to have this form with A. So it's fairly restricted, actually. Actually, you can think of like a simple example is that if somehow that one of your coefficient has a different variance, then you kind of have a special direction in your matrix, right? So then you would imagine that, oh, this ensemble probably wouldn't be invariant if you just do some change of basis.
And is changing the 1/2 change just the coefficients on the ABC, or does it break unitary invariance?
Yeah, I think if you put it here, something like this, then there will probably be an additional. Well, actually, no. I think in this case that you can have that kind of form. Yeah.
You can.
No, you can't.
Related to the mean value, right? If I change the mean value, that turns up here.
Yeah, the mean value would also work. Would also break, but I kind of think that the mean value might be a minor issue that you could probably shift your ensemble in some way to make it. Well, because a fixed matrix. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I think you might be right. Yeah. So, any questions so far? Okay. So now, if we have this definition, let's see. Okay, so I should say like the ultimate thing right now is that using this probability distribution of a matrix, then how much of a given system, say either obtained numerically or say from your experiment, how much of the statistical property can be described by this ensemble? That is actually kind of like the goal right now. So if you will, that you can take the definition of quantum chaos being that, or if a quantum mechanical is quantum chaotic, then all of its statistical property, when you zoom in the suitable range, has to be described by this random matrix theory ensemble. Okay, so if you will, you could take this as a definition. So, what is a suitable range? That's a great question. So, it could be a little bit subtle. So By suitable range that I was meaning, I typically mean that, let's say I give you a Hamiltonian and then suppose you can diagonalize the whole spectrum, then actually we don't usually expect that this whole spectrum will be described by the random metric theory. So one of Wigner's insight, and then actually this has been checked a lot, is that it only the statistical property of this spectrum could only be described by random metric theory when you only zoom in into some older one region of the spectrum. And this, how large this should be, is a little bit try and error or empirical thing, but that's what I mean by suitable range. Yeah. But which actually what we will see is that, so later that we will actually have a real numerical example that we would, I would demo that we will actually see. Any other questions? Okay, great. So now let's use this Gaussian orthogonal ensemble and then look one very famous thing, or yeah, like a very popular statistical property, which is the level spacing statistics. And I will give you the poor man's derivation, or man. Which means that I only consider the random matrix Gaussian orthogonal ensemble, which is just 2x2. So let me just write it as this. A, B. So I kind of rescale the orthogonal matrix element so that all these A, B, C are random variables. That's coming from the Gaussian distribution with variance one. So what is the eigenvalue of this matrix? It's easy to solve. I don't know if I can remember, but let's see if I get it right. C. Let me check my cheat note. You know what? Let me just make sure that everything is consistent with my notes. So let me like this. Okay. So we want the probability of the difference, which is this. And that's just this. So the probability distribution will be A, B, C. Maybe A, B, C, it's not a really good variable because that kind of clashes with D, but A minus and then this is the Gaussian part from the exponent. Okay, any questions so far?
What happens to measure of integral when we change the coordinate? Is it not the same variant?
Sorry, say it again, what was the question?
We wanted to have the distribution invariant under rotation, but what happens to the measure of integral? Right? Also that is invariant?
Well, so the whole ensemble, you're right, the whole ensemble is invariant under the change of basis, but in terms of the eigenvalue will be, so there is indeed a,
I think the density of probability is invariant, but the probability itself is not invariant anymore, right?
Right.
The measure part is not invariant.
No, yeah, well, go ahead. I think I probably understand your question. So are you trying to ask that is this P of omegas will still be invariant if I do some change of basis, right? So it's not obvious, but yes, it will still be, yeah. Maybe a short answer to say this is that, so you see that in this case that there are three random variables and here there's only one. So actually how do you obtain that is actually by obtaining some marginal probability from this. So you don't integrate all the variables. So there are two of the variables that's coming from some weird combination that you have to integrate out. Yeah, and then it turns out because of the probability distribution is invariant, so the marginal, well, actually, you're right, maybe it is not that obvious. So it kind of depends on the combination of the, so there are two variables that you have to be integrated out. But it's not obvious that if this integral measure is invariant under the change of basis, but I think in this case that it turns out to be. Yeah, great question. So I hope that these integrals are fairly elementary and one could, I don't have to go in detail about how to integrate this thing and then, but just a quick mention, which is that you kind of want a change of your variable, say, this, then you see that here, this one just becomes, 2y and then but a squared plus 3 squared will actually still be x squared plus y squared. So the x variable can be, and then here that you have to change the measure, but it turns out that this is still dx dy dt. Yeah. But you see that the x part that is just a pure Gaussian integral that you can just integrate out, and then that gives you 1 when you take in one part of the square root 2 pi. And then the other part that you have to do some polar coordinate integration. So in the end that you will get the result, which is something like this. Okay, hopefully that you can kind of envision like how the calculation is done. Yeah. So actually, there is a ambiguity, which is that if we look at the mean level spacing from this probability distribution we just derived, and this is just a Gaussian integral with omega squared, then you know, if you can use mathematical or even look up the table, then you know how to do this, then you get square root pi. So what we usually do is that we want to normalize the mean level spacing to 1. So the inverse of the level spacing is the density of states. Okay, so this is like the mean level spacing, which is or are they proportional or inverse? Right, okay. So we kind of want to normalize that to 1. So let's just do a change of basis. Then you want this measure to be the same. So you actually get P of S, which is pi over 2S. So this is the celebrated Wigner-Dyson distribution. So we actually only use 2x2, and then actually that's the result. But you can ask like, oh, but usually we are interested in the level spacing spectrum, which is like a lot of numbers. That's gonna be way beyond 2, right? So there is indeed a level spacing distribution that's derived from some n by n Gaussian orthogonal ensemble, but there's actually no analytical form. And then if you're really interested in like how to derive that and then how does it look like, then I will refer you to check like there's like a very thick book that by Meta. It's called Random Metrics. Random Matrices. They have almost all the detailed things about random matrices that you could find. But I think what's surprising is that you see that the BGS conjecture says that if you have a quantum mechanical system, then the level spacing statistics should be described by this distribution. So that's their conjecture. So actually, let's maybe check that right now. So I need to. So let's see. And yeah. So any question so far?
Could you repeat what was the conjecture here?
Sorry.
Could you repeat what was the conjecture?
Okay. So the conjecture is that if you have a quantum mechanical system whose semi-classical counterpart is chaotic in the classical sense, then the energy spectrum will say the original conjecture was that the level spacing statistics will be described by the Wigner-Dyson distribution. But you can kind of generalize this conjecture, say, oh, maybe not only the level spacing statistics, that maybe some other statistical property that you could obtain from the random metric theory that you can also check that if they agree. So, and then some even more generalization right now is that if you have a quantum mechanical system that doesn't have a obvious semi-classical counterpart, then this conjecture kind of doesn't make sense, right? But nowadays that physicists still use this conjecture and then even take this as a quote-unquote definition of quantum chaos. Yeah. Okay, so here that let me show you something. I think this will be part of your homework, is that right? Yeah. So here that we take a quote-unquote Hamiltonian that's coming from this paper, and the Hamiltonian is kind of like a two coupled quantum mechanical tops, is that right?
Two spins, yeah, coupled. Model.
Yeah, couple spin model. Let me see if I can remember the Hamiltonian. It's probably that's
S1V S2V. It's kind of hard to see without the lights.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Could you? Or let me see if I can zoom in. Are you talking about this part? Okay, then that's fine. Yeah, don't worry about the blackboard. Are you talking about the projector?
No, I was talking about the blackboard.
Okay, then let's forget about the board right now. Sorry. Yeah, it's just some Hamiltonian. Then you'll see in your homework. So, but one thing. Okay, so here that Minu already diagonalized the Hamiltonian for me. So she just gave me all the spectrums and then with different parameters. So you can see that there are four parameters. One is coming from say mu equals to 0.5. Second one is mu from 1.4, and then the third one is 1.85. Fourth one is 2.5. We can probably even just look at the model just really briefly. So this is the Hamiltonian, and the mu is this part. Then by tuning mu, you can actually go from chaotic to not so chaotic part. So after we diagonalize this spectrum, then we get all these numbers, right? So how exactly actually do we do the level spacing statistic to compare with the Wigner-Dyson, right? So actually this is important. So remember that we actually, that Wigner-Dyson level spacing statistics has the implicit assumption, which is that the mean level spacing is one. But when you actually get a spectrum from the, say, experiments or from this numerical diagonalization, the mean level spacing wouldn't be one. In other words, that the density of states will not be one. So it's actually really important to get a meaningful comparison to the Wigner-Dyson distribution. You have to normalize the density of states, make them to one. So this procedure is called the unfolding. Okay, and this unfolding procedure is not unique. And of course, if you have some good guess or good some non-analytical form of the density of state, you could probably use that to fit the density of state and then trying to normalize that. But here that we use like a procedure called the polynomial unfolding. And then let me just describe that, like how does this work? So first of all is that we really want to figure out what is the density of state. But you see that because you have all these discrete values, so the density of states will just be a delta function that located on these discrete values. And one nice trick in the statistics and probability is that when you're trying to find the probability distribution, instead of probability density function, you calculate the cumulated density function, which means that you integrate your PDF up to some E point. So in that case, that this G of E is the integrated density of state up to some variable E, and which in this case is actually just counting how many eigenvalues that you have below this E value. Okay. So once you have G of E, then what you do is that you use some polynomial of degree n trying to fit this G of E. You're trying to extract the smooth part of this cumulative distribution function. So once you get the fitting, then you know that, the density of state should just be the approximately the derivative of this F of E, right? So that you can actually normalize your obtained spectrum so that you can quote unquote unfold it, make it that has the uniform density of states that's normalized to one. But actually you don't actually need to do that. Like take the derivative. There is actually a nice trick, which is that once you get the F of E, so you see that we actually need is the statistics of Sn, which is your energy level spacing. And then we have to normalize that to one. So we have to multiply that with the density of states. But if the spacing is small, then this whole thing can be approximately be written as this, which means that to get the statistics of Sn, you just need to plug in the E values into the F function that you just obtained from the fitting. Then you can get the whole set of this Sn and then use this as to analyze the statistic of that. Okay, sorry, any questions so far? This is like the unfolding procedure.
This is why we have to look at narrow windows.
Right, so that's part of the reason. So so that's one of the reason. Another reason is that you usually if you look at the end part of the spectrum, they wouldn't behave chaotically. They would actually be very special. So what really is a suitable window is also we usually only expect that the middle part of the spectrum would be described by some random metrics. For example, like even if you have a non-exactly solvable model, but you're trying to solve for the ground state and some low energy excitations, that they would typically be very special. Yeah, okay. So that's why that's correct, that there's like only a window of the energy that we use to analyze to see how close it is described by the random metric. Okay, so now this is the unfolding procedure. So first is that I wrote a function to calculate this cumulated probability distribution. So I take, say, middle, I think it's 3/5 part of the spectrum. And then I just plot this G of E of E. So you see that when the energies are when there's enough energy levels, then technically that is G of E will be a whole bunch of staircases, right? But they, when you have enough of this E, then when you zoom out, it does look kind of smooth. So it's this smooth part that we want to extract. So once you get this G of E, then I use the polynomial fitting. Here that I use a polynomial of degree 5. So there are 6 variables, right? Okay. So I just use some least square fitting package from Julia. And then the red line is the fit, and then the blue line is this G of E. So now once I obtain this F of E, I can do this unfolding. So this is the so-called unfolding procedure. So I just plug in the numbers that I got from the exact diagonalization to this F of function, and then get the whole, this data set of S of N. So, and then after that, I just plot, I just calculate the histogram. And you can see that their distribution does follow the green curve, which is the Wigner Dyson. Sorry for the label here.
You say this is a 2x2?
So the green line is obtained by the 2x2, but the real data is not. Yeah.
So even though there's no closed form solution for an n by n, it's still pretty close to.
Maybe I can just say something real quick, which is that even for the n by n case, that it doesn't have like a closed analytical form, but the asymptotic behavior at high S and the low S are the same as the one that you got from the 2x2 result. Yeah. But it turns out that in practice, that even this 2x2 level spacing statistic can describe a real thing, like real system. The statistical property of the real of this really like n by n system really good. So maybe let's look at the one parameter which is not chaotic, and let's see. I think it's the parameter mu equals to 0.5. So again, that I just plot this G of E again, and then now I have to refit the data. And then I do the unfolding using this F of N that I just got. And then, okay, yeah. Let me see if I can have more bins. Yeah. And you can kind of see that, well, again, like the statistics is kind of, the quality of the statistics kind of depends on how many data that you have, right? So here that there's only like 500 number of the eigenvalues that we use to do the statistics. So it might depending on how you bin the histogram to compare with the real distribution. But here you can see that at the low S, that there seems to be more levels that they have smaller level spacing compared to the Wigner Dyson, which is the green line. And actually this red line is the so-called the Poisson distribution, and which is actually the distribution that of the level spacing statistic that we would expect from integrable system or like a non-quantum chaotic system. So in a sense, like this is actually one possible diagnostic for quantum chaos. So if you have a system, you diagonalize the match Hamiltonian, get the spectrum, then you do unfolding and then study the level spacing statistics and then see, does it look like a Wigner Dyson or does it look like a Poisson or something in between? Yeah. If it looks like a Wigner Dyson, then we kind of say that, oh, this is a quantum chaotic model. Any question up to this point? Okay, so.
You said that some people use this behavior to like define quantum chaos.
Yeah.
What? I just want to make sure I'm understanding. So given, so is that, are they just saying any theory, would that then mean that any theory with a random matrix description would, when interpreted in the classical limit, would exhibit chaos in the classical sense? I'm trying to connect, because if I define it to be described by a random matrix theory, and then I'm trying to see, okay, well, how does that connect to what I normally think of?
Yeah. So the conjecture says that they will agree, but they are indeed systems that they violate the conjecture. So you could have a system that in the semi-classical labeling that shows chaos, but the level spacing statistics doesn't show the Wigner-Dyson behavior or like the random metric behavior. I don't know if there's any system that has the
there are polygonal with billiards camp, like some kind of polygonal with billiards show this kind, like so Wigner-Dyson, but they are not chaotic in the
class. Yeah. Right. So, but I would say it's in this case that because you do have a obvious or good semi-classical correspondence, so you could use that as the definition of chaos, right? But a lot of the many-body system that people are interested in nowadays, they don't have a clear semi-classical correspondence, then you don't have like a more natural picture to define quantum chaos. Then you have to, if you have to define one, then if you have to make a definition of quantum chaos, then this would be the alternative definition that a lot of people use nowadays. Yeah.
Sure.
Does that answer the question?
Yeah.
Okay. You have 5 minutes. I can go. I have to go to the most important part. Yeah. So you can say, "Hey, Jacob, this is like too much work. Like, I have to fit the I have to plot this g of e and then do the fit the polynomial fitting and then do the unfolding procedure. Is there any easier way?" So it's true that a lot of physicists also think that, or that's like a lot of thing. And then also this unfolding procedure is not unique nowadays. So nowadays there's another also pretty popular statistics one can study, which is this so-called gap ratio statistics. So you see that the one problem about the level spacing statistics is that because of the density of state, so you kind of have to normalize all these level spacing to mean level spacing to one, right? But what if you just want to study the ratio of the level spacing? Then you automatically will cancel out this density of state or mean level spacing part. So that's why now people who study this Rn, which is defined as the following. So it's just really the ratio of the consecutive level spacings. But then we just take the smaller one. So there's two ways of forming the ratio, right? But we just always take the smaller one. And it turns out that if you have a GOE, and then again, like if you take a 3x3 matrix, then you can derive an approximate probability distribution of this RTO dot. And one nice thing is that if you calculate the mean distribution of GOE, then you have a value which is like around 0.53. If you have a quote-unquote integrable model, then you expect that the level spacing will have a Poisson distribution. And in this case, that the gap ratio would also have a Poisson, so actually it's a exponential distribution. Then the average R is actually 0.39. So, which actually gives you like a number that you can calculate the mean gap ratio of your spectrum and then use this number to see, oh, okay, is this system closer to an integrable model or closer to a quantum chaotic model? So for example, that here that I just one function that you could just get the R statistics. And then the first number here is the mean value of the R. And you see that for the parameter that's 1.85, we expect that it to be closer to the chaotic case. And then we do get the mean value, which is around 0.53. And remember that when the parameter is 0.5, then it's closer to the integrable model. So we get the first number, which is closer to the 0.39, right? And then the rest of the number is just the distribution of R or the delta of R, yeah. And actually this will be, I think it will be your homework, right? Yeah. Okay, any questions so far? Yeah, so maybe a short message that I'm trying to send in this lecture is that there's another alternative definition of quantum chaos, which is like how good can this system be, the statistical property of the system can be described by the random matrix theory. And here that we show the statistical property of the spectrum. And what I didn't talk about is that there are actually even more statistical property of the spectrum that you can try to study, say spectral form factor, if you heard of something like that. And actually not only the energy spectrums, the eigenfunction, the property of the eigenfunction could also be understood. And which, for example, like something that I don't have time to dive into is that if you look at the entanglement property of a quantum chaotic wave function, then you would actually expect that the scaling of the scaling of the entanglement versus of the dimension of the Hilbert size, it will have a log dA with some order one correction. Again, like I'm just saying some words that I don't have time to explain, but that's something that you could actually understand use from the point of view of the random matrix theory. And actually another thing one could even ask further, which is also pretty, I think it's actually pretty fun, is that how does quantum chaos from this perspective connect it to the thermalization of the system? Because we know that in classical mechanics that we kind of believe that the chaos is actually the reason why we do see our world is described by the statistical mechanics. Like, but in the quantum mechanical case, how does that happen? I also don't have time to dive into that, but hopefully that at least like this is like some introduction about random matrix theory and then the relation to quantum chaos. And then like there's like a really concrete demonstration here that show you that like say how do you use level spacing statistics to check this. Yeah. Any questions? So yeah, any questions? Yeah, okay. I think that's about it. Yeah, that's the time.